Hey, this is Engineer Eric from the Jimmy Doan Show. You're listening to part two of our June 21st, 2009 Jimmy Doan Show.
Oh, great. So that means we have to clean up our lingo.
No, we can say anything we want, I think. No dicks out. Monitor it, okay. Okay.
Oh, no.
But we're live, like anybody can tune into us. Okay.
All right, let's go then.
It's the Jimmy Doan Show.
Jimmy Doan.
Jimmy Doan Show. This is Jimmy Doan.
Hey, we're back.
We're back. That's right. Oh, yes. In case you
actually,
just...
we're finally here.
Yeah.
Well, after all these years, since '98.
For those of you just watching, of course, just tuning in, we are in the process of doing what? Another half hour,
45-minute segment.
We'll see how it goes.
Good luck on that. I don't have 45
well,
minutes.
Well, I got 2 hours worth of stuff.
Okay, we'll have people logging in asking us questions here in a second, so.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They'll be screaming. They'll be screaming. It won't take you long to piss someone off, Jimmy.
So, just by way of introduction, this is the Jimmy Doan Show Libertarian Podcast, and we hope you're...
Yeah, we've been doing this. We've been in the audio on iTunes and everything for, what, 3 years now, right? Or four?
Yeah, it's been three or four years, but yeah, you need to go to jimmydoan.com.
It's D-O-A-N-E.
They'll be seeing it actually. It's being broadcast as a third on the screen, yeah. And you can see what we're all about. And but definitely tune in. You should get a laugh and learn something.
Yep.
Hopefully.
All right.
Spider Monkey, by the way. Spider Monkey Band.com. Go check them out. They really rock.
Check them out.
All right. What is the next on? Anything in particular that we were starting on?
There's always something in particular.
Well, we could do Sotomayor.
Okay. Why don't you do Sonia Sotomayor?
Now,
we talked about her.
We talked about her last time, and I gave my little introduction.
Now, remember, right. Jimmy Doan is always ahead of the curve here, especially when it comes to politics.
Right. Yeah. And so what we're trying to do here,
and economics.
This is Councilor Curtis speaking, and we are trying to give you a little preview here of our view of the Supreme Court candidate. And right. My first thought was, I said this last time, I'm just insulted that they would... That this would be a political pick of all the things. I know, but come on, man. I mean, it's the Supreme Court of the United States. I mean, this is arguably
come on, she's a Latina woman.
This is arguably a position that's more powerful even than Obama.
Right.
Because I mean, this person could be there for decades.
Right.
Influencing policy and culture
as has happened many times.
And here we are. We look. You see the Sunday morning shows, and all they talk about is what a great political move this was for Obama.
Genius.
They're not even talking about her jurisprudence.
No,
they've blown that off. That's a moot point. It's right. Now the fact that she's a woman and a Latina.
Right.
I'm blown away by this, Jimmy.
Well, I don't know why. Again, one of the things that people seem to have forgotten is that the Supreme Court, of course, is a government agency, but it was the one, supposed to be the weakest one. However, it was still designed to keep tyranny, that is, from overtaking without the Supreme Court making ruling on what Congress and the executive branch could do. They could just obviously do anything. Now, the Supreme Court says no. I'm reading the Constitution here, and you can't do this. And with one notable, very big exception, which was the Jackson invasion of Georgia in the 1830s, I guess it was, the Congress and the legislature have gone along with what the Supreme Court has said.
Yeah.
So that's supposedly the barrier between us and tyranny.
Right.
Unfortunately, over the years, that has been eroded rather dramatically, as you mentioned, with political appointments and... other types of mistakes. You know, the fact is that people get on the Supreme Court and they have a lifetime tenure, and suddenly they decide to change. Now I can remake the world in my own mold. I mean, and they never had done anything like that before. I guess it's a classic case of Lord Acton's, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And the deal is that once, I guess, you realize that you're in there for life, some people have gone a little nuts. You know, the Warren Court was one in particular. And
it's a good gig.
He was, in my opinion, the ultimate political appointee of the court.
No question.
I mean, of all the justices.
And, of course, a lot of them were after, during the first Roosevelt, or not the first Roosevelt, but during the Second World War, Roosevelt. There were a bunch that were designed to make sure that the totalitarian portion of the war, the martial law and all that stuff, was kept in place. Whereas, and of course, what's typically happened in the past, during the Civil War, for instance, they essentially suspended the Constitution in a lot of ways. And then after it was over, they put it back. Yeah. And you're supposed to, and they did the same thing during the First World War, you know, Alien Sedition and all that stuff. And they put a lot of it back, but never all the way back.
Right.
Well, and after the Second World War, they didn't hardly put any of it back. I mean, one of the things that was, to give an example, it was supposed to be a very temporary measure, was withholding from your paycheck. That was supposed to go away after the war. You know, the fact is you were supposed to be able to, yeah, and that, you know, funny. Now today.
Well, so there's no question this is super, super important. I mean, these are, like you say, in theory, the guardians of our freedoms, the people who
they're the last barrier between us and tyranny.
Right. And yet they're politicizing this. Of all the things that I wanted Barack to be non-political on, if that's possible at all, this would be it. And I mean, I guess I could imagine that maybe he really believes that this background, this varied background, imbues her with some sort of jurisprudence, powers of jurisprudence. How is that? Jimmy, help me, Jimmy. I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, I'm seriously, and I look back over, I went back and read some of her opinions.
A big R research.
I did my job on this.
You're a man.
I read about 15 of her 150 appeals court opinions.
Okay.
And the notable thing about them was there was nothing notable about them.
That's good. I like that.
I mean, there's just nothing in there. You read through these things. I can tell you a few of them and what they held. And you look at these and it's hard to believe some of them are even cases. I mean, you know, here's one where she ruled that a student was not given an equal chance, not given equal protection, okay, an equal chance to succeed because they were demoted to kindergarten 9 days after they got to that school.
Wait a minute, this demoted from first grade to kindergarten?
Right.
And this is a Supreme Court.
That's what I'm talking about. This is an appeals court case.
Who brought it?
The parents.
Can you imagine how trivial that is? Why didn't somebody just laugh them out of the courtroom?
I'm with you on that. I mean, I don't get it. It's amazing to me. This is because the government is so entrenched in education.
Right.
They're trying to read constitutional rights into the education.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
No,
and she's saying, I think that one she would have dismissed the claim for the student. I think she was the dissenting opinion. But even so, I mean, like you said, how is that even a case? She dismissed a discrimination case here for this young black man who was unable to prove, in her opinion, that he was in the same position as another person who got a promotion.
Now that was a big deal. That was a big case. That was the firefighters case.
No, well, that's a different one. The firefighters, the big one, which we talked about last time, which is...
Briefly, but...
Right, and these firefighters all took a test, and none of the black candidates scored very well. And
well, we got to do something about that.
They threw out all the results.
Yeah.
And her ruling was that was okay. In other words, she's all for reverse discrimination.
Right. I mean, of course, well, we'll see what happens. Again, a lot of this stuff, I don't know, to be honest with you, I don't know of any liberal-type people that have converted to conservative on the courts, but you've certainly seen conservatives that are supposedly conservative people go crazy hog wild liberal on the Supreme Court.
It's happened the reverse as well.
It has?
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing much you can do about that. That's the random element.
That is the random element. And of course, up until Roosevelt, there were some important, but it didn't really make all that much difference because the government was reasonably small.
Right.
And they couldn't do much harm. Now, of course, with the government, you know, commanding some 40% of the GNP or better, you can see that what they do, this is the elephant in the room for sure. And you can see that what's going to happen here.
I don't mind a powerful Supreme Court, Jimmy. I don't mind an activist judge on the court. I really don't. Because what usually that means is that they're throwing out legislation.
Okay. I always thought that activists meant that they were making law.
Right. Well, it does in the true sense of it. I mean, the derogatory sense is you have somebody like Earl Warren
right.
who orders that students across the country have to be bused across their county in order to alleviate this equal protection discrimination
situation
in the school.
Well, there was a court in Kansas, I think, that actually raised the taxes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and of course,
real activism. But what mostly happens is that judges get branded as activists when all they're doing is throwing out legislation.
Okay.
Because they call that the counter-majoritarian difficulty, as though these people, the people who are not elected by the majority, judges who are not elected, are throwing out legislation that was created by
the majority elected people. Right. Well, of course, but that actually is their job.
I know.
I mean, the simple fact is that one of the things, and I've said this many times, there are many laws on the books that are illegal.
Totally.
The only way find out, unfortunately, you have to pay big bucks and get it to the court.
Right.
And then the court can rule on it.
Right.
Because the court does not have the ability to march in ahead of time. I forget there's a name for that.
Right.
And
you got to have standing. It's got to be
standing.
Right.
Right. And
it's got to be right.
But I mean, it's untold numbers of laws. And we're going to talk a little bit about that here, with the gambling business. There are untold laws on the books and some habits, I guess, that people do that apparently are violations of the law. And until somebody can actually get there and argue it coherently, it stays on the books. And of course, unfortunately, you get some people that aren't that coherent, and the judges will go with precedent unless you can show them that the precedent was totally wrong.
And we've seen that happen recently, and that points to what I wanted to say about this particular candidate. I mean, in my opinion, if you're activist at all and you're going to write in about this candidate one way or the other, you should write in negative. That is, don't confirm this candidate, Sotomayor, not because she's a woman or because she's Hispanic, but because she hasn't done anything notably jurisprudentially significant.
Right.
She hasn't done anything. She hasn't written any opinions, which to me shows she has the type of insight and understanding and logical reasoning ability that a Supreme Court candidate has to have.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, the kinds of judges they should go after are the ones who ruled the correct way on some of the more important cases that went through the Supreme Court in the last.
Well, of course, you say rule the correct way. One of the things that we've seen, and this happened like this last Monday when there's some rulings, there's a bunch of rulings that are 5-4.
What I'm talking about is some of those, if you take the people who ruled, if the four
oh,
was...
Oh, I see what you're saying. In other words, if you say the appeals court, it was appealed to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court upheld the appeals court, then that appeals court judge maybe is one that should be in line.
No. What I'm saying is that you look back over the appeals court decisions,
mm-hmm.
choose for yourself which the correct ruling, which ruling you think is correct, and then that judge, whichever judges supported the decision in that way, are the judges you would pick. For example, in the Kelo case, you have or the Raich case, let's say, these cases were
Raich was the marijuana in California, and Kelo was the eminent domain in Connecticut.
Correct.
Right.
And in both of those cases, in order to make it to the Supreme Court, had appeals court cases.
Right.
And some of the judges at those appeals court levels ruled that in the eminent domain case that the city did not have the right to eminent domain those properties. And in the Raich case.
And the Raich case, the appeals, there might have been a judge there that said, hey, government butt out, federal government butt out.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Now, of course, we're calling those the correct ruling.
Right.
But the Supreme Court said no.
Well, hey, man, but we're here to tell them what's right.
Well, that's true. That is our job.
That's it.
On the Jimmy Dome Show.
You know, it's like we've said every time when these candidates come around, they won't tell you which opinions they would overrule. We will.
Yeah, we will.
And if you go back and look at we have a Supreme Court show from a couple of candidates ago.
Right.
Back when it was Roberts or even before that, Alito, I guess.
Yeah.
And we did a case back when it was Harriet Myers was on the chopping block.
Chopping block. That's right.
We did it. We did a great show, and we included all the cases. Of cases.
Well, it's interesting because since then, and I think I might have gotten you a copy of the book. They've had a book out called The Dirty Dozen.
Right. And I've read a lot of it.
Interestingly enough, about half of those or more were ones that we knew
that
were
Dirty
Dozen. These are the cases that obviously on their face were decided incorrectly.
Right.
For a lot of reasons, and it's scary. Well, of course, that is the deal. Is that people are fallible. People make mistakes. And Supreme Court justices can too.
Word.
Word.
All right. Well, hey.
So what I'm going to talk about here was we got an email from Pantera or whatever his name
is. Right.
And he said, apparently he's an online poker player. Anyway, he wants to know, since poker is a game of skill,
right?
How can it be called gambling?
Right.
And then how can you ban it on online poker if it's a game of skill? And it's a good question. And it seems like this is one of those cases where it seems like he's got a case that you could go. And I saw this happen.
They've been through this, though.
No, we did. Where we went through it was there was a raid on a poker game in somebody's house. And the cops found out about it, and they raided it. And we talked about it. But, you know, I never did find out what the courts found out about it. Because we talked about it. And the people in the game, after the raid, when they have been arrested and released and everything, you know, on their bond, their argument was, it's a game of skill. It's not
gambling. Here's the way that it works, Jimmy. And for Pantera, this is the way that it works. Yes, if all you're doing is playing the game, then it's a game of skill, and it's totally legal. What's illegal is the house taking a cut.
Right.
Okay, so what's illegal is not you playing online, Pantera, but the fact that the place that you have to play online, the house is going to take some of the cut, and that's what's illegal.
Huh.
You can go play online, Pantera.
Let me ask you this. Can the house, for instance, charge admission?
No. That's the whole point.
I mean, just to walk in the door.
No. Not if you say it's linked to the poker at all. You could theoretically just have a, invite everybody
party.
Over.
Exactly. Dancing. And by the way, in the back room, you can play poker.
Right.
But the entrance fee for anybody that walks through is $5.
Right.
Okay.
If you could claim that, of course, they would try to prove that you were really just trying to get the money for your poker game.
Okay, but as you say, what you're saying is that, and this is what happens in Vegas, is that they take like a percent of all the pots.
Right.
As a matter of course.
Right.
And so you can win all day long, you can win pretty big money, but the house has taken the 5%.
Exactly.
And so that's illegal. And of course, I guess that's what happens with the online.
Right.
Obviously, they take a piece of the action.
But there's plenty of places online, Pantera, that you can play and make a living. I got friends who, that's how they support themselves, is just playing
online.
Well, of
course, one of the things that's funny about this is the almost the incredible futility of trying to enforce this.
Oh, yeah. Well, I love that.
I did find out that when they disallowed credit cards, the credit card companies went along with this, and when they disallowed the credit card transfer of funds, apparently quite a number of the the Antigua or whatever it is.
They took a big hit.
They took a big hit, right. Well, so anyway, the point is, though, that what's funny about this, in a way, to me, is that they call it gambling. Now, I have a personal vendetta against the state regulating any kind of gambling, and here's the reason why. As we talked about earlier on this show, in the first half or whatever, about competition. Competition makes best use of the resources at the lowest price and highest value. And competition in gambling is the same way. And what we've seen is that you can't, if you have a monopoly one way or the other, all bets are off. So what the state does here in Florida, especially, is they ban gambling, and then they set up their own gambling casino called the lottery, which has the worst odds on the planet. I mean, it's immoral. What's funny is they ban it because they're worried about crime and prostitution and more prostitution and more crime. And then some prostitution on top of that, and a criminal element coming in, and they're the criminals because the expected payout rate is like 30 or 40%, whereas Keno, which is the worst game you can play in Las Vegas, which is the sucker of the century, pays out 80%. And I mean, so the thing about it, what's so funny about this in a way, is that they do this, they call gambling a sin, and yet they crowd out everybody else, but they will shoot you if you try.
They institute the worst sinful, the most sinful gambling.
But they
possible.
Are doing it for a noble purpose. It's for the children.
Right.
And since 1988, we have put $10 billion,
in our
just,
pockets.
It is hysterical to think, and the case has been made in the past. In fact, I saw that down here with our electric company, that the take is way better. It's better than if they just, you had the gambling establishments and just passed a regular old tax on them, like a property tax like anybody else, they'd get a pretty good chunk of money. But no, don't want to do that. They want to have their own deal. And of course, one of the ways you can tell that the Florida lottery is such a scam is they have to keep changing the game. I mean, the simple fact is that you've been able to go to Las Vegas for 100 years and play the roulette wheel, craps, blackjack, baccarat, and the slots. Hadn't changed. Now the slots have changed some. But basically, you know, those games haven't changed any because everybody knows what the odds are, and the payout is, you know, 92 to 95 or 96% if you're an idiot. And so, you know, you bet $100 and it costs you $8 or $6 or whatever to play it. Whereas here in Florida, it costs you, if you bet $100, it's going to cost you $60 to make that play. And it's, you know, again, the only way they can do it is to outlaw the competition. They do the same thing in education. They basically outlaw the competition. And when by all any, almost on its face, competition is the lifeblood of a free society.
That's competition without government.
Without government, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Free competition.
Right.
Free competition. There is
once government enters in on the competition, there's no more competition anymore.
Well, not only that, what happens is they distort it. They can enter, very often they'll enter in just a little minor way. They'll put a tax, for instance, which is not, it doesn't seem at first to be harmful. Or they might have one little regulation, or there might be a zoning thing where you have to be in a particular, so it's not too hurtful at first, but it always gets worse and worse and worse. And of course, with something like gambling, there are the people that will march in the streets and say it's a sinful thing and it's horrible and as if nobody's going to do it. And of course, same thing with prostitution. They don't call it the world's oldest profession for nothing. And, you know, they desperately for some reason want to outlaw it or find a way to get around it. And they just had another sting down here the other day where they spent from 3 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock in the morning, and they caught 8 girls down here, downtown here, and, you know, must have cost a couple $100 each, and, I mean, for the patrolman's time and the processing and everything
Well, they make them pay for that nowadays. Cost of prosecution is
that right?
in your court fine.
And so the only way they're going to pay for it, of course, is go back out on the street. And
yep. Yeah. All right, so Jimmy, what else we got? You said you wanted to ask me about that $1.2 million fine.
Yeah. This was a big deal. This was the girl, I guess it was, she shared... Yep. This is copyright law, which, of course, we talked about this on more than one occasion, that the copyright law is
sunk.
It's not so good. The $1.92 million verdict against a Minnesota woman accused of sharing 24 songs over the Internet could ratchet up the pressure on other defendants to settle with the recording company if the big fine can withstand an appeal.
Right.
So they're going to go to an appeals court. And, you know, it's interesting because... when you rent a DVD or something, and it'll say right on there, according to the Stockholm, whatever it is, $500,000, you know, 5 years in jail if you copy
this
thing,
even
for non-military monetary purposes. And
all you have to see is that FBI warning in the front of your DVD,
right?
To know how ridiculous it is. Like,
well, but I mean, apparently they're charging like $8,000 per song for the or whatever it is.
Minimum. I mean, it's $150,000 per violation.
Apparently this is under federal law, the recording companies are entitled to $750 up to $30,000 per infringement.
Right.
And apparently they settled on a nice reasonable $8,000 or whatever it was.
Now let me tell you how ridiculous the copyright law is. If you have something like, let's say, a piece of paper in front of you that you wrote down, you typed that thing out there, okay, mm-hmm. Jimmy? Let's say you wrote that. I know you didn't, but let's say you did. It's yours. You've created it. You've fixed it in tangible medium. It's now copyrighted. But if you go ahead and register it as copyrighted, then you're entitled to statutory damages. Statutory damages is just some arbitrary amount they picked out of the hat.
And put it into law.
Right. How much do you think it is if I went and took that piece of paper, went down to the 7-Eleven, and Xeroxed it one time,
uh-huh.
What do you think the maximum amount is?
Is that $150,000?
$150,000 per copy
is
the maximum amount that they can award you. I mean, that gives them the leverage to basically say, well, we'll settle for a mere $1,000.
Right, exactly.
You know, and what they did with this girl, now she had downloaded a couple of thousand songs.
Right.
And had them on her Kazaa.
Right.
And she's one of a few thousand defendants in the same exact situation.
Right.
The record companies are suing these people to make examples out of them to flex their muscles and try and recoup a little bit of their...
They don't realize that the business model is dead.
Oh, it's deader than dead. They're just flailing around. This is the death throes.
And of course, she's going to pay up.
Oh, yeah. Well, because she's a single mom.
Right, exactly.
You know, she owes him $1.9 million. I'm so sure she's going to pay. Yeah. This is your justice system at work here is because they offered her to settle for a mere $5,000, okay, as they offered all the defendants.
Huh.
I think about $5,000. I think that was total. Okay. But still, so she goes to trial and loses, of course, because they proved easily that she copied this stuff. But
so was this a jury trial?
Yeah.
And the jury did this?
Well, because see, what happens is the jury is given a limited form of instructions these days.
Uh-huh.
They're told what the law is.
Otherwise, it's nullification. They don't want that.
Right. And so all that is, they're told what the law is, and then they're told, do these facts fit into this law? Don't worry if the law is right anymore. Don't worry if the law is cool, or if it makes any logical sense, or if it's just at all. Just apply these facts to this case. And all they were asked to do was determine whether or not this girl had copied these songs. And they picked 24 of the songs because those were the ones that were obviously copied a whole bunch of times, like the most downloaded out of her.
Right.
Out of her.
And then, but then the jury went back and said $8,000, I guess. Or did the judge do that?
I don't know, but they might have given them some limited instruction, like
the damages, the amount of damages. Isn't that sometimes a separate hearing? Or?
Yeah, and that could have been the judge, like you said.
Okay, right, yeah.
But it doesn't matter. I'm not the jury really can't help her in this situation. Unfortunately, it really sucks. But it's just amazing to me, and this is another example of sort of justice spun out of control. Here she is getting slammed for $2 million. I mean, that's supposed to be some sort of justice.
There really is a problem with the statute because she's been fined $1.9 million for stealing 24 songs that went for about $1.99 each on iTunes.
He said,
slightly overstating the cost of the songs on the site, which actually they're 99 cents.
They're 99 cents. Right.
There's no way this could be the correct result. Even the presiding case might find the $1.9 million excessive. Order the retrial. He also implored Congress to change the copyright laws after... somebody or another was ordered to pay $220,000.
Jimmy, were instituted by Queen Anne after the printing press was created. Because all the scribes who used to copy books by hand were thrown out of work instantly. So they went to the Queen and said, we can't have all these people who copy all these books by hand thrown out of work. It's going to be chaos.
Chaos.
Chaos. So what we need you to do is issue an edict, a mandate that says that nobody can copy anything of yours that is written by the crown, or if they do, they have to pay you a royalty.
Right.
And that's where the word royalty comes in. You got to pay the queen. And so that's where it all comes from. Somehow it got worked into our constitution under the guise of helping spur competition or spur industry. You know, it's sort of a initiation of initiation. It helps you start getting started or something.
Then of course that even after you do that, then the Congress steps in and passes tariffs and everything to protect you forever. They still have steel tariffs and shoe tariffs.
Hopefully the copyright system will all crumble once the Chinese get on board and start really ripping everything off.
So the Chinese are gonna do something right.
Woohoo!
Okay, what's next?
Else?
I got tons of. Okay, I'll go through the first one here.
Okay.
I noticed that in New York it says, please give the disabled your seat or else. And apparently now they're making a law with a $50 fine that if you see a disabled person on the transit system and you don't get up to give the seat, it's a $50 fine. And so this reminds me of a click it or ticket here where they've just passed here in Florida the law that says they can look through your window. And if you're not wearing your seatbelt, it's like $105 or something here locally. But now it's the law, $50 fine if you don't get up to give your seat to the elderly lady or the guy with the back pain or whatever it is. But I mean the new campaign also recognized that not all disabilities are visible, which of course.
So I'm disabled. Get out of my seat.
Exactly, or it's $50. You know, I mean it reminds me also of the signs here all over town, where the little blue signs where they have the handicapped parking.
Right.
And you know, $250. I never have understood why you had to have a law for that.
I don't either. And I'll tell you, Jimmy, I have never seen. If you drive around these days in the United States of America and around in this state, what you will see, time and time again, place after place, is parking spots up front completely empty.
Well, let me tell you, I will say this: that my guess is, and this has happened to me a couple times. You think that if you're going to be in there for more than about a nanosecond. That you're worried about the fine. I am worried about the fine that somebody might, you know, come by and write the ticket. And my guess is this, if there were no fine, that more people would say, I'm just going to be in here for 5 minutes, and so I'll park in this spot, and even though it's marked disabled only, please, for the disabled only.
Be courteous.
Be courteous, whatever it is. But again, I think that would be a better solution if the market would figure it out. And of course, the other thing is that as bad as it is, I mean, I know that when we're driving grandma around, for instance, what we have done in the past, when all the disabled parking places were taken.
You let her out up front.
You let her out, and you're right, and somebody will come out
and get her. Mugger.
And hug her or hold her or do something.
I said
and then
mug.
You go park the car. Oh, mugger.
Mugger.
Well, hug, mug, mug it's all the same. Thug does the hug with the mug. Yeah. Okay. So,
but yeah, you let her out.
Jimmy, I tell you, I see it more and more now, and they've got, they must have ramped up the number of handicapped spots you have to have.
You should see how many places there are at the skateboard park. There's like 20 of them.
And the 7-Eleven, that's where I see it. The 7-Eleven that I go to has like the first three spots right up front are just
always
empty.
And guess where the ramp is on our 7-Eleven?
Around the side?
Yeah.
Well, wait, let me get this straight. the skateboard park, who the hell's going to the skateboard park that's disabled?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, that's right. You have to have it anyway. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Oh, right.
That's the whole point. And we're talking about, you want to talk about a drag on the economy. I mean, that kind of stuff, just over and over again. I mean, tens of thousands of dollars on your ramp. I know we spent $30,000 on the ramp to our building, which has never been used in the 3 years that, that we've had it there.
And, haven't ever been
and we can't park in the only covered parking spot in the place.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yes, our building, our law office is an old, basically it looks like an old big house.
Mm-hmm.
And there's exactly two covered parking spots.
Yeah.
Except that the regulation mandatorily means that one of them has to be 1.5 spaces wide. So the entire covered parking, okay, is taken up by the handicapped spot. So when I go to my office on the weekends in the rain, I have to park outside in the rain and run through the rain to get
into my office. You can't just take that disabled sign down?
No. Permanently up there. $250 fine.
Can't you just move it over? You know, can't you just kind of move it over to outside?
They attach it to the foundation.
It's good. In other words, when I saw that the show on the History Channel, When Humans Go Away or something like that.
Yeah, we've talked about it a few times. Yeah. That'll be the last thing.
That'll be the parking. Don't park here or the handicap will be the last to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Okay, good. 2 million years from now, the aliens show up and they say, oh, what are these signs?
Mm.
Okay. Have you noticed that everybody speaks English on the Enterprise there, even though they find an alien from 47 light years away and they speak?
They have a universal translator,
Jimmy.
All right.
God. Now you just pissed off all these Justin TV people and all these Star Trekkies out there.
Hey, I got a light note here.
Okay.
Okay.
Engineer Eric has a home business.
Uh-huh.
And the other day, can I mention this?
No, we haven't talked about it. Go ahead.
No, guys, can I mention this?
Yeah.
We got visited by the home business inspector.
Yeah.
And no. Wait a minute, let me get this straight. You got this little, this little web business or something, right?
Yeah, I don't know what it's going to be. I just registered Dr. Evil Engineering.
Okay, so you had to get it. Did you have to pay for the little ticket?
Yeah, I paid. I just said, graphic designer or whatever.
How much was it?
$102 for 6 months.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
The barriers to entry? That's what I thought.
Barriers to entry, yeah.
$200 a year just to...
Right.
Just to have that. Okay, so then the little man comes around and he has a badge.
Oh, yeah.
Was he like a uniform or anything or just a suit?
Oh, yeah. Like a pseudo uniform. Looked like he was delivering a package or something.
But he had to see your home office.
He wasn't Stasi or anything. Oh, yeah, he wanted to see it, but he walked in and he just goes, and he takes out his little camera and he goes, and he takes a picture of my computer with porn on the screen and, all this other stuff.
Now it's on his camera. I would get him. Let's get him.
And he didn't even turn around to see that I actually had bubblegummed the business license up to the wall, so that it would, because he said you must be displayed in a place of business, somewhere where they could see it.
Right.
He didn't even see it. And I mean, it was.
How do you know?
Because he didn't turn around.
No, let me tell you, these guys,
they know everything.
They know everything. They're like the
RFID,
like geckos, their eyeballs kind of rotate around.
Yeah, they are like geckos, I can tell you.
Well, anyway.
He was a perfectly nice guy, but the point is that he obviously has a $50,000 a year job.
Right.
Where he drives around to different people.
Brand new SUV, company car, whatever. Yeah, paid for by the taxpayer.
And he's got full family benefits.
Because.
And retirement.
Oh, yeah. Because he's the guy that's got to protect us from Engineers Eric home office.
Right. Yeah. And he comes and he goes, we're going to have to shut you down if we get, you know, noise complaints, or you know, if you
no.
if you leave trash, yeah, if you get trash out in the yard,
texting too late,
yeah, texting too late or something. No, and I said, well, those pixels get awfully noisy at night.
Yeah,
you know,
boy, I'll tell you,
they're bright.
I have a window here. I have blinds on it though, but you never know.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it, also think about the inspection. I mean, as if people want things to blow up. Every gasoline pump has been inspected by Charles Blunt or whatever his name is. And
it was Charles Bronson for
Bronson,
a long time.
Bronson, right. And the...
Man, we can't have a show without that phone ringing.
I'm telling you, man.
It never rings except when we're in the show.
You know who it is.
I know who it is. Mrs. Jimmy.
It's Mrs. Jimmy.
Yeah, what is she thinking about?
She's... Go ahead and take it.
No, hang it up.
I did. Hung it up. Anyway, the deal is that... also, the elevators. I mean, like, we want to have elevators crashing every single elevator. I mean, the little tiny ones.
Well, that happens all the time, Jimmy. I've seen a lot of elevators go down. Oh, no, wait a minute.
It's the people in the elevator.
Yeah, no, there's nothing.
I mean, you see them blasting out the sides of buildings all the time, you know, just coming crashing.
Blasting out the sides
they,
of buildings.
You know, they come down and they hit
something. Raining in the parking lot.
No, I mean, you know, that's the thing. They come down too fast, the brakes fail, and then they go horizontal out through the concrete and then smash down and killing everybody in sight. Right. Yep. You read about that all the time.
I think it was 1860s when the guy first cut the rope on the safety elevator and demonstrated it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, and it was like Otis or somebody.
Yeah, seriously.
I think it was like Otis.
Oh, yeah.
Otis elevators?
No, really, I think it was.
You might be right.
I think it was Otis Berg.
Right, right.
Thank you, Mr. Otis. Luthor, a little tiny
played Mr. Luthor.
Yeah, no, not that Otis. I'm talking about the Otis that has the elevator. I think it might have been him that put those, which I never have quite understood. Also, when you see the terror movies very often, the brakes, for some reason, you know.
No, they never work on
They never terror. Work. It's like the
All
guy.
All you gotta do is cut one rope on a James Bond movie.
Yeah, that's right. And the whole thing goes, and then, of course, the guy gets out of the elevator and he's running down the middle of the street with somebody chasing him in a car. Wouldn't want to go off the side of the road into the bushes or anything. He runs down the middle of the street until the car catches him. I love that.
it won't matter anyway, because apparently Mercury in the next couple billion years might actually hit Earth. There's 1% chance. I just read that on space.com. I got a couple things, actually.
Okay.
I did like this one. The woman claims loss of $1 million in her mattress.
Yeah, this was that was over in Israel, right?
I'm not buying that for a dollar, man. I'm not buying. What she
an Israeli woman mistakenly threw out a mattress she said had almost $1 million inside, setting off a frantic search through tons of garbage at a number of landfill sites on Wednesday. Maybe she was just making this video for
Exactly.
Brad.
That's what I would have done. Yeah, yeah, no
exactly.
question about it.
The woman told the Associated Press that she bought her elderly mother a new mattress and a surprise present on Monday and threw the old one out. The next day, she said that she remembered that she had hidden her life savings inside the old mattress. I woke up in the morning screaming. Anyway, but apparently there was like armed guards out there trying to get the people there was a lot of people trying to search for it, of course.
Right,
it gets out there, whatever. And she said the money was in U.S. dollars and Israeli shekels. And, she said she refused to say how she required such a large sum. You know, it was all my money in the world.
Yeah.
Right.
Me too. Mine too.
Yeah. But you said
if she finds it, I want to make sure it's not mine.
Right. So apparently there's 2,500 tons of garbage that arrive at the site each day. And, but they were going to beef up the security to keep the would-be treasure hunters away.
Why?
I don't know. That's a great thing. I'd be like, hey, I'll give a reward to somebody who helps me find it.
Well, not only that, I would think that, especially if it's at a dump.
Mm-hmm.
You just stand by the gate and wait till somebody walks out with a mattress or a big wad of cash.
Pretty easy.
Yeah. Pretty easy. Absolutely.
Yeah.
She says that she stashed the money in the mattress because she's had traumatic experiences with banks in the past. She would not elaborate. Well, of course.
Well, of course, we've had
traumatic experiences
here recently. Yeah,
I like this. Okay,
she might be right. Go ahead.
She might be right. I got another one here. A conceptual story takes 1,000 years to read.
Yeah, what was that all about?
This was some conceptual artist Jonathan Keats. He's created a story that will take 1,000 years to read.
And why is this? How can he do that? Even with Evelyn Wood's reading?
Well, first of all, it was printed in I'll tell you here. It was printed in Opium Magazine.
Whoa! Right away you got it. So far we're on track.
Yeah. Hey, 1,000 years, but don't go so fast with that story, man. Whoa, I'm trying to absorb this letter by letter. But It's printed on the cover of Opium Magazine's current issue. It's appropriately dubbed the Infinity Issue. The story, being a mere 9 words long, and they're going, come on, is that really a story? Each word is concealed under a different layer of ink. Each layer, Keats told Wired Magazine, will fade incrementally over the next millennia when exposed to ultraviolet light. So Keats intends for the piece to investigate the way that the digital media has increased the rate at which we consume text. So anyway, I, of course, you know, Jimmy Don't Show, you don't have to wait 1,000 years. I figured out exactly what the story was. A man didn't get married, lived happily ever after.
There you go.
That's it.
Was that, what is it, 9 words?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's the best 9 words I can come up with a story.
There you go. All right. Well, no need to wait that 1,000 years, folks. We've done it right here again on the Jimmy Don't Show.
And hey, for you on Justin TV, of course, we did have our buddy Gino wrote in, and we are getting new Futurama, 26 new episodes.
Oh, that's so great.
I know. I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
And including some more movies, apparently. I don't know. And you said that the Apple came out with the day before,
they came out with the new iPhone.
Oh, the new! I thought you were talking about the iTit.
Right, and the iTit. Right.
The
yes, yes,
it yes. Cost between $500 and $700, depending on speaker size.
Yeah.
And it's considered a major breakthrough because, you know, it's basically a computer chip that can store and play high fidelity music in women's breast implants.
Right.
And it's a major breakthrough because women have always complained about men staring at their breasts but not listening to them.
Right.
Yeah.
So now we will listen to their breasts.
Solve that problem.
Yeah, so problem solved. Again,
problem solved.
The market. See, the market works. People don't believe me. I'm telling you, the market always does a great job.
Jimmy, I'm just going to confirm here. You're right. It was Elisha Otis that introduced the safety elevator in 1852.
There.
Big R research live on
demand. I mean, look at this brain.
Man.
This brain. Do you see this?
The stuff trapped in there.
I mean, trapped in there. This is 150 years of knowledge stored in Jimmy's brain. Honest to gosh.
Petabytes of information.
Can you imagine the trivia that is stored in this noggin of mine? Of course, that's all I got. That's all I got. Nothing any useful. You saw where the Library of Congress wants their guns back.
No, what I didn't see that.
The
yeah.
agents apparently, I didn't realize this, but you know that IRS agents, a lot of them are licensed to carry guns.
You know, licensed
they come up to your,
kill.
You know, they're authorized to carry, to shoot, to kill. I mean, you know, they are licensed to kill. So anyway, you know, the point is that they show up at your front door and they'd like to do an audit. And if you say no, I mean, they literally could pull a gun out and say, you know, whatever. The IRS, okay, I understand
yes.
that part. The Library of Congress agents, though, I'm not sure if they go after, you know, book. You're not allowed to, most of the time, you're not allowed to borrow the books out of the library. You have to read them there. I believe the only people that I know of that can are some certified, some kind of special researchers and Congress people can take books
out. It is their library.
Yeah. So, well, it's ours. Even though it's called the Library of Congress, it's
not the Library for Congress.
No,
it's the library,
but I mean, they are allowed to take books out. But the deal is that, so I was wondering, why do these guys, you know, don't try and swipe a book from the Library of Congress. So I guess it's a felony and they shoot you. You know, stop or I'll shoot and just.
Well, we covered that story last year where the person hadn't returned their library book and they came and arrested her for misdemeanor theft.
Yeah, right. But anyway, it was funny because apparently until 2009, they were allowed to carry guns. And somehow in the 2009 omnibus spending bill, which was signed into law in March, that prohibited the, I don't know how they would put it in there because this is why nobody reads the damn thing. Library's office from using federal funds to purchase, maintain, or carry firearms. And they're talking about separation of powers and, you know, God almighty, it's just unbelievable. So anyway, they're all bent out of shape because they can't carry their guns anymore. The horrible things that go on at the Library of Congress.
Well, there's a lot of people running out of there with books.
I doubt it. I can tell you from personal experience, having spent some time there. Yeah, it doesn't happen.
Now, they've got like 47 turnstiles you got to get through to get out of there,
actually,
too.
In the research department, believe it or not, that's not true, but they do have a guard. And in fact, when you walk in, they make you you have to leave everything there just about at the gate. The guard makes sure you have a little, like you, they give you a key to a locker.
Right.
And you're, for some reason, I'm not sure what this is. Oh, I do know what it is. You are only allowed to use pencils to take notes.
Oh, right. So you don't write in the book?
So you don't write in the book. But you can take all the pictures you want with your digital cameras. And let's see, what else? Pencils, digital cameras, and I guess a tape recorder, although you're not supposed to be making any big racket. But I did see people, you know, they'd set up like a little tripod with the camera, the digital cameras, and they were photographing stuff for research. So, you know, anyway, but yeah, it's good.
They had another thing over in over in England, over where Bernie is, in South Yorkshire. I don't know if that's exactly where he lives, though. The long-suffering residents of Butthole Road couldn't take the jokes. Visiting tourists and backside bearing teens any longer. Getting mooned as you walked down the street. So they changed the name to Archer's Way.
And now, of course, people are walking down
with,
there
with shooting, arrows shooting arrows. In the doors.
You know, you wake up in the morning and, your front door looks like some pincushion thing with all the arrows in it.
Right. Also, apparently, a cocaine test prompts a Red Bull removal in Germany.
What?
Did we talk about that one before? Oh, six German states stopped selling Red Bull because it contained a trace amount of cocaine. That's pretty amazing. So yes. Just keep it on me, and I will deal with it.
Chile, we're on the air, honey.
Chile police find Chile police find cocaine suitcases. The actual suitcases were made out of cocaine. Did you see that?
Whoa!
Yeah. Police say,
no way.
Yeah, well, so, this is Santiago, Chile. Police say it's two suitcases carried by a woman who was about to fly from Chile to Spain were made of cocaine.
That can't be. How do you do? How do you weave cocaine or whatever?
Detective Leonardo Morales at the Santiago Airport.
Cluso.
Said
right.
The drug was not hidden in the luggage. This time the suitcases were the drug.
I don't believe that.
It was made of...
That's right.
It was made... The
Cheech
suitcases,
and Chong movie.
Well, sort of. Yeah, very similar.
You did it.
The suitcases were made of a substance combining cocaine with resin and glass fiber. He said Tuesday a chemical process could be used to separate out the drug. And the officer said the suitcases were heavier than their contents. The 26-year-old Argentine woman was arrested and...
said she didn't have a clue.
Said
15
she had no idea.
Years in prison.
Well, this is in Chile, so I don't know. Maybe they said, hey, why don't you take that back in the room with me and we'll examine the evidence and we examine your evidence and we let you
That's
go.
It.
How did you take the cocaine out of the bag again?
Yeah, show me.
We have a little party.
The problem is what she said was what gave it away was when they asked her this: has this suitcase ever been out of your sight since you packed it? And she said, "Yeah,
exactly." So now, did you see the? I thought that this was a total joke, and I had to Wikipedia it and everything. But the pedicidate, where they have this. It's a headset for a child that's got, you know, earphones, and it's got a nitrous nozzle in the front.
No.
I'm looking at it right now. I sent this to you guys.
Yeah, you did.
And you guys got some actual feedback on that. But, of course, everybody wrote me back and said, where's the adult version?
Right.
But I can't believe that somebody – I mean, this is great, but, I mean, I can't believe that somebody, A, didn't make an adult version. B, at least got an idea here where I could how I could make an adult version, which is nice. But – what they do is they actually make it for kids that they give them a Nintendo Game Boy system and a portable CD player, and then once the child places his or her head and swings the snorkel down from its resting place atop the head, pedicidate transparently monitors respiratory functions and distributes nitrous oxide. The child comfortably becomes sedated while playing a Nintendo Game Boy system or listening to music. This dramatically improves the hospital or dental experience for the child, parents, and healthcare providers.
Because they're doing nitrous, too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, exactly. Remember when
but it's got this kid out there, it's like half cross-eyed going, you know. I mean, it looks like this really cool alien, you know, headgear thing that you would wear, but I mean, God. Man, what a deal.
Well, they give them Ritalin and everything in school, so this is, you know, just the next step.
But, I mean, you know, trying to get nitrous oxide half the time is like pulling teeth.
And why is it a controlled jug or something? Or
well, nitrous oxide is a controlled drug.
Yeah, it's illegal
drug.
In the state of Florida. That would be illegal.
Well,
it's illegal
unless they dilute it with 100 parts per million sulfur dioxide, and you have to figure out some way to filter it out is the only thing.
Right.
Yeah, we wouldn't know about
it. Okay,
yeah.
What's next?
Well, that's pretty much it for me.
Okay, I got one or two little things here. One is, once again, Palm Beach County Sheriff's deputies responding to burglary shoot a neighbor. They went in there and the neighbor was looking.
I tell everybody, Jimmy, don't call the police. If you're pinned down in a crossfire, don't call the police. Okay? Just to give you an example of when not to call, it's all the time. If you're conscious, don't call the police.
Well, they found this guy. Apparently, he was 21-year-old. Somebody called about peeping in a window or something, and then they the deputies went out there and they found this guy laying down in the front seat of some kind of a car, and they thought they saw a weapon and blasted away at this guy and hit this guy in the forearm or whatever. They later found out that the weapon was a cell phone.
It's one of those phasers.
Right. That's right.
Four-shot cell phone.
The last thing that I've got here is the, and I've mentioned this once or twice before because it's one of my big deals. I got in trouble for this the other day. Florida's failure. There's an editorial here about how we've just had a whole raft of new tests, FCAT, everything like that, and we're fifth from the bottom nationwide, even though we spend,
Woo!
You know. Yeah, right.
Well, Jimmy, I don't mind those rankings when they put us in order. I mean, to me, that makes no difference because somebody's got to be last.
Right. The fact is that there are 46 states that can look at us and say we're better than Florida. I mean, that's what we do. We have a really nice, you know, not a goal, but a place of honor there for those other 46 states because they're ahead of us.
Well, to me, that's irrelevant. To me, it's important if the education works at all, which, of course, it doesn't.
Again, this brings up the thing I was talking about before, about competition. They're afraid of competition. If you don't think for 2 seconds that if the school boards and all the other stuff was eliminated tomorrow, that we would have the finest, least expensive education system, the finest one, in short order with the people, kids being turned out with a real education in whatever they want to do, it would happen almost very quickly. And what's so funny is that every time they talk about here locally about education reform, they talk about 3 and 4 and 5 year plans. And of course, the question immediately arises: well, what about that kid in the eighth or ninth grade that's not going to get the benefit of this? I mean, they're going to get some kind of a little cheapy sheepskin. But they've had 5 year plans. It reminds me of the old Stalin 5 year plans, the industrial plans of the Russians. You know, they have 5 and 10 year plans all the time, and none of them work for obvious reasons because they are politically based. They have no way to measure. At least in competition, you can measure right away who's doing a good job. It's just amazing to me that people are scared to death that somebody's going to start up a terrorist school, a Muslim school, another Catholic school, a religious nut school, a atheist school, whatever it is, and that people are going to, you know, be educated or not educated. I'm telling you, it would all work out just fine.
Jimmy, all I have to know, and what I know, is you take a look at the Communist Manifesto, and plank number 10 out of 10 is free education for all the kids.
Right.
And that's all I need to know. I mean, that's one of the plans.
Oh, I love this.
That's it. it blows my mind. And then, you know, what's really funny is that those planks are like one sentence long each, okay?
Yeah.
The second sentence, actually, that one, number 10, is like two sentences long. The second sentence says, and education will be closely linked to manufacturing productivity. Ha!
Right.
I mean, it is the furthest. Yeah. Education these days is the furthest from productive education
right. That
we've been in a century or something.
I mean,
you know, people, and all you have to know is, graduates everywhere, nobody's using their degrees.
Right.
You know, that's how linked it is.
But, of course, the whole thing was set up that way. When you read Thomas Dewey and Horace Mann and the people that got started on this, their goal was to provide a sheep-like base for manufacturing, people that would be very obedient and go through, you know, the systems to provide the workforce for the rest of the people.
I don't mind education providing the workforce.
Well, I mean, but it's still, they wanted to take a lot. It was an indoctrination from day one, is what I'm saying. Not a free society or anything like that. I mean, they looked on it as... looked at children as raw material to be honed into a... Like the Matrix, you know, only not exactly hitched up the way the Matrix...
I don't care if it was a literacy program from the 1890s. The fact is, it's an abysmal failure.
Right.
And the only way to get it back to any sort of measure of success is with the free market.
Right.
And that means selling off all the schools
selling
as
off.
They are.
Right.
Demolishing,
dinosaurs.
Dismantling the entire system.
Yep.
And letting it go from there.
Yep, I agree. No question about it. And that unfortunately, that's not going to happen. But, I mean, that's true. There's no question in my mind that if the school board were to say, tomorrow, we're going to disband, that's it, I'm not going to collect any more taxes. Y'all can keep the money. There's not money on your tax bill. And starting next September or whatever it is, you're on your own. We're going to sell all the school buildings and everything.
You know, Jimmy, it started out as a thing for poor kids. And here it is. Middle-class people everywhere have free education. I mean,
it's not free, of course. It's
well, I know.
No
well,
cost,
what I mean is
no charge,
education that they don't pay directly for. Because
right.
They pay.
And they pay, the other thing that they pay for is getting no education.
Well, right.
That's the worst part of it is the money that's spent here in Alachua County. It's $11,000 a student per year. And we're getting slugs. I mean, well, here it is. It's right here in this report I just read. You know, we're fifth from the bottom, and you know, no increase, no rise in anything for the last 5 or 10 years.
There was a school in the news this week, Jimmy, where 60-something% of the kids weren't going to graduate eighth grade, and it wasn't here in Florida. And if you Google that, I'm sure it'll come up.
Google.
But yeah, 66%. There you go. There's a success rate for you.
Yep. Well, I've been down here to the school board, and of course, what happened when I went down to the school board and chided them about this, about the success rate and the reading and the literacy rate, which they have to publish once a year, and they've done it, and I've gone down there and chided them about this, and basically, after 3 minutes, they say, well, you need to wrap it up. We've heard enough. And that's it. And don't want to hear anymore. They don't want to hear it. They need a 12-step program.
They don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
All right, we got anything else?
Nope.
Okay.
I think we're out of here.
Okay, good.
To give, of course, any shout-outs, some other than the Hanger Dogs, HANGARDOGS.com. Make sure you check out their show. They're really awesome. Really good stuff over there. And they do a lot more shows than we do.
Yeah. Well, they have jobs, too.
They got jobs and stuff, like national security jobs that I guess they do. Get a lot of emails from him, a lot of them. Boy, I had like 20 from Stitch the other day.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but so shout out to them. Definitely shout out to Tio Twocky and Will Hammond and Gino and Rob
Counselor Bart.
Counselor B, yeah, send us more naked pictures.
Yeah, yeah. We got a repeat visitor over there from Louth. Let's see, that was in Ireland. And we got a lot of repeats here.
I'm just looking on the list.
Niles, Michigan. And Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Oh, that's K-Man.
Oh, I knew that. I'm just testing. Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for visiting. Yep. Check us out on Justin TV sometime.
YouTube, maybe.
Maybe YouTube.
This is our first little trial Justin TV thing. I think that it... we'll see how... I mean, it looked pretty good on the other room. I went back in there when you guys were talking, and it looked clean.
JimmyNone.com.
So we'll give it a shot. Maybe we'll post some of these links on our video links. The first video show we've done ever.
After the feedback, it may be the last.
Yeah. Leave us positive comments only.
Yeah. No. You can also download us
everything
from your favorite podcast site.
Yeah, and make sure you email us at jimmy@jimmydone.com.
Happy to answer your questions.
We got Counselor Curtis over here, legal counsel. You know, if you need free counseling, he's out there, you know, whatever.
Worth what you pay for it.
Yeah, worth what you pay for it.
Worth what you pay for it. I'm standing up now. Turn my camera off.
Turn my camera off.
Take it easy, Jimmy.
All righty, Jimmy.